friends and fans of podcasts everywhere, watch out. If you're not careful, you might find yourself listening to the Rish Outcast. If that happens, I'm afraid there may be no one left to help you.
Good afternoon, boys and girls. This is Rish Outfield, and you have stumbled upon another episode of the Rish Outcast. Turn back while you still can. So this is an episode that is sort of Frankensteined together. I would be the doctor in this case. Most of the time I am the creature. But from two different recording sessions, but I will seamlessly stitch the two together and then bring them to life with electricity. I am recording this in April 2023, and you caught me in a rare good mood. Everything is starting to look like spring. The snow is starting to melt, and apparently it's going to doom us all. So everyone is worried about runoff and flooding and water levels rising and landslides and mudslides and water slides. It's something that is worrying, but I'm trying not to worry, because if it's going to flood, it's going to flood. Tomorrow we're going to go get some sandbags. The city has provided 25 sandbags for each person who wants them, but you need to bring your own shovel and then assumedly a vehicle, like a truck or something, that can hold 25 sandbags. And so that's the plan for tomorrow, is we're going to go get some and, hope for the best. Even so, I'm happy to see spring. I'm happy to see what few blossoms have started. The tulips have already started to come up. They're usually first, aren't they? Puts me in the mood to podcast. Doesn't it put you in the mood to podcast, kids? Or to listen to podcasts? Or to support me on Patreon? Or to say something offensive in the comments section? All of which is welcomed. Okay, carry on.
Hey guys, this is Rish Outfield. This is an episode. That's all I can guarantee for this one. Well, I'll try and throw something in to please you. Hear me out.
So, back when we... there were different phases of the Doonstief. Different eras, if you will. And we were making it up as we went along. One of the things that we learned early on was to put the story at the beginning, and then you can put all the conversation that you want afterward. There were still a couple of people that complained about the length of our banter, as we called it, but these were the same people that complained about us in general. And when these people died, I didn't send flowers, but I did make a very small donation to a charity that was in direct opposition to these people's values. But one of the phases, one of the eras of the Doonstief was when we brought in all of these outside producers. And around that time, we came up with this idea that we would use the Doonstief to plug the projects that we had going, the things that we were selling. This was fairly late, once I started doing audiobooks, and probably around the time that Big was writing his first novel, which still hasn't come out. We got Announcer Man to record all of these intros to a little segment of the show where we would plug one of our projects.
Now it's time for Plugs at Your Heartstrings.
And I think we probably ended up using two of them. because we were so bad at plugging our own work. I suppose we were bad at a lot of things. It's something that I have tried to get better at putting my stuff out there and then mentioning that my stuff is out there, but it has never gotten easy. So I'm going to take a minute to plug an audiobook that I did called Not the Same.
You were not the same after that.
I did Hatchling a few months ago, and I was not thrilled with the result, but I still worked my butt off on it, on the audio of it. The performances are all uniformly good. Well, I can't say uniformly good because one of the characters' voices changed about a third of the way through. Ugh. But hey, we're not here to talk about Hatchling. We're here to talk about Not the Same. Not the Same is the story that I wrote about the identical twins. I knew a girl who was an identical twin, and she was very, very generous in talking to me about it, answering my questions, no matter how weird they were. And sometimes they would be weird because she was willing to tell me what it's like to have an identical twin. And I would have strange questions and she would be willing to answer them. And the answers to the questions were often very surprising. I said, Kayla, have you ever had a bad dream and you woke up and you told your sister about it, and she said, I had the same dream. And she said, yes, but you must have asked me this question before to know that. And I was like, no, no, these are just ideas that have jumped into my head. Kayla's sister got married, I think 5 or 6 months before Kayla did. And, you know, they didn't do everything at the same time. Kayla's sister got married about 6 months, maybe it was even close to a year before Kayla did. And Kayla called her sister at one point to say that she'd, you know, missed her period. And her sister said, oh my gosh, I did too. They both got pregnant at the same time and they both had their babies within a day of each other, I think. Her sister had hers on Friday and Kayla had hers on Saturday. Even though Kayla's baby was due a week later. This twin stuff was fascinating to me. And I would always thank her for telling me these stories, talking about identical twinness. And I said, you know, one day I'm going to write a book about identical twins. She's like, yeah, you do that. Kind of thing. And I never got the impression that I was creeping her out with these questions. Maybe I was. I know that I am not anyone's Prince Charming, but I was genuinely interested in her life experience and had no sexual interest in Kayla at all. It was just, she had a life that was alien to me. And fascinating. And eventually, Kayla had her baby and she went on maternity leave. And around that time, I started writing this story called Unidentical Twins. Or Unidentical. I couldn't come up with a title that I liked. I wanted there to be a magical word that meant unidentical that I could just call the story. It was that one word, and it would tell you all that you needed to know. Like unidentical twins tells you. Well, does it tell you all you need to know? Not sure. But I wrote this story, and it came together very, very quickly. And I didn't see her again for a long, long time. She came back into the office one day, and I guess it was to clean out her desk. And I happened to be there and I talked to her and I said, hey, I ended up writing that about the identical twins. And she's like, oh, that's great. You said you would. But there, she had no interest at all in reading it. None. And I found that interesting. But I did finish the story, and here we are, and I've put it out. And as I was doing the audio for it, I thought of a Ben Folds song that is actually one of my favorites by him, called Not the Same. It is a story. It doesn't have anything to do with twins, doesn't have anything to do with non-identicalness. It's about a guy that he met at a party who freaked out, and he climbed a tree and he wouldn't come down. And finally, I believe he had his friends helped him out of the tree, and it was a life-changing experience for this guy, and he became a born-again Christian. And the reason that I like the song so much is that in concert, Ben Folds would have the audience sing this little backup part. There's like a middle of a song, there's like a bridge or an instrumental or something like that. And he would have the audience sing it, and he would split us into three groups. Here, I'll just play a little tiny clip of that part, so you'll know what I'm talking about.
People with lowest voices take an A, go. Check that out. 2, 3, 4. Okay, people with slightly higher voices would take the third, goes. People with the highest voices take the fifth scale degree. All parts together, go. Beautiful.
Anyway, it was really, really amazing when he got to that part of the song and he would have the audience sing. It felt unreal. It was so cool. It worked really, really well, and it made me love that song. And I guess, he has done that at various concerts where, and other people feel like I do about it. It's just a memorable, surreal experience. And so when I thought of that title, Not the Same, I thought, that means unidentical. It's not exactly what I wanted, and it doesn't convey a sense of dread or anything like that, but it will do. And so that's what I titled the story. Oh, recording cut off. I think the battery died, or no, I ran out of space is what happened. And so let me talk to you a tiny bit about what's going on in my world right now, and then we'll get back to the book. Okay, so insert that shit here. So I've been editing this book, The Cormorant, every single day for months, since January. And I started on chapter 45 today, chapter 45. That is halfway through the book. Something that I've been doing to keep sane is that I will open the audiobook and I will open something else, a different thing, whether it is The Outcast or part of one of my own stories. There are other stories that podcasts have asked me to do during this time, and sometimes I will open that. And one of the things is also the next Laura and the Witch story. Novella, I think maybe at this point it's a novella. It's not. It seems long because it's such slow going, but it's not actually long. The opposite is true of The Cormorant. It is insanely long. I wish I had more synonyms, but it does not drag. Each one of her chapters is manageable. There have been one or two chapters that are are really long, but usually it's something that I can get done in one sitting or two sittings. But my own audio work takes forever. It will take anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour for a chapter. So what I've been doing is I've been alternating. I'll get like a little chunk of one and paste it in its own document. And when I finish that, I copy it and paste it back into the original document. And then I go to a different project and do the same thing with a chunk of that. And it's the reason that I do it that way is because they're very, very small segments, very small goals, very small mini projects. You know, I'm going to work until I get to the end of this chunk. And then, you know, I'll paste that into the full document and hit save. And then I can go outside, or I can go to the bathroom, or I can, you know, waste time on the internet. It's not optimal, but it does work. I wanted to say something that I discovered today. I've talked quite a bit about Old Widow Holcomb, the secondary protagonist of the Laura and the Witch stories. And, you know, obviously the chief antagonist of the first story, but not since then. She is a character that is endlessly delightful to me because it's unlike anything that I've written before. And I have the added advantage of being able to do her voice in the audio. It's a voice that I think I've kept fairly consistent, though the character herself has not been totally consistent over all the stories. In some, she is pretty vicious, and in others, she is somewhat sympathetic, somewhat tender. In some stories, she shows her age. She's over 100 years old. And in other stories, she's pretty vibrant and energetic and horny and still has a spark of humor to her. But today I was editing something where she was talking down to Laura, as she often does, complaining about her generation. And it occurred to me whose voice I was emulating. So I've been doing this for 10 years, right? More or less. And it never occurred to me until today that I voice Old Widow Holcomb as Pat Carroll doing Ursula the Sea Witch. "You've still got your voice, your pretty face, and don't underestimate the importance of body language. The men up there don't like a lot of blather. They think a girl who gossips is a bore." Now, Holcomb isn't exactly an impersonation of Ursula. But Ursula is fiendish, but having a great time with it. And she doesn't speak with an English accent, but she doesn't speak with a easily recognizable American accent where you can say, "Oh, that's a Boston accent. Oh, that's a Texas accent, you know. Oh, that's a Stanford, Connecticut accent." I think that that's how Holcomb's voice is. She always says Laura. You know, I think that there's an extra syllable in L-A-R-A. Laura. Child. Girl. In the part that I was editing today, she tells Laura to go in the backyard and pick out a branch from the tree that grows back there. And it's a magical tree. And I think in this story, The Company You Keep, it's the very first time I introduced this tree. And it would be great if I mentioned the tree in future stories. But so far, very few things that are introduced in a story come back in another story. But Holcomb tells Laura to go back there and pick a branch from the tree, and then Laura comes back and she says, "Was it the first branch you saw?" And she's like, no, it was the third, just like you told me. And she says, and did you thank the tree? And Lara says, yes. And Holcomb says, and what did it say? And Lara's not sure if Holcomb is joking or not, that the tree answered her. And so she says something frivolous, like, it said, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. And Holcomb says, I don't know where these plants pick up their manners. You'll be sure to let me know if any tree or shrubbery ever speaks to you by name. And it's silly nonsense, really. In the same way that that Journey into Another Dimension story was silly nonsense, but it's managed to keep my attention for all these years. I mean, in 2023, I'm writing new Lara and the Witch stories, and so I must be doing something right, at least to entertain myself. But also, yeah, it's fun that I've come up with a voice that I can be, that I can go back to time and time again, and that is so entertaining, for me at least, to voice, to perform. I'm going to pivot from talking about Cormorant to talking about Not the Same. You know, but having said that, even though this is really hard, there are a couple of really juicy parts that she's written. And the one that comes immediately to mind is this character of Adolphe Mejia. And he is the uncle of Gawain Mejia, and the brother of Leopard Mejia, who is the king. And he has sort of taken the throne. A big mystery in this book is what became of Leopard, of the king, the rightful king. And I wasn't really given any direction as to how to voice him except for, you know, read the book, and he should have the same accent as everybody from Mejia, right? And so what I did was I came up with this throaty, almost lazy, a toad-like way of speaking. And she's written him, he's the most British character I think we've gotten, although she definitely has characters that just, even if I weren't voicing them, you would get a Britishness to them. But Adolphe has these things where he will say something threatening or condescending, insulting, and then he'll add sir at the end of the sentence. So it'd be like, you have come here to bandy about words with me, with nothing much to back them up, I think, sir. And it's a delight to voice this character. And here's the thing. When I was reading the book back, holy smoke, was it last year? Some of the book was not going to be read by me, and some would. And whenever I got to one of these really juicy chapters that was not going to be one of my chapters, I would be jealous. I would be like, oh. And the one that I was editing today is spectacular and just so much fun to voice. And it was not supposed to be mine. So luckily, I got the whole book. So the chapter that I was doing today is one of those where Adolphe has lots of lines. And it was not supposed to be one of mine. But then I ended up doing the whole book, and so I got to voice this chapter. Yeah, it's times like this. It's the performance of it, where I wouldn't care if I were being paid or not. Maybe I'm not describing it well enough. Anyhow, let's talk again about Not the Same. But let me pivot to voicing a book where almost every single major character is female. That has been something that I have struggled with on the last couple of books that I've done. And it's certainly something that whenever I do the Lara and the Witch stories, I'm aware that I have a masculine voice and Lara is either, you know, 11 or 12 or, you know, all the way up to 17. And this one that I did recently, The Company You Keep, which is pretty much everybody is female. there are probably 10 sentences in the whole book by male characters. Anyhow, the primary challenge on this one was, okay, two girls, they're seniors in high school, they are identical twins. But I made the choice not to voice them the same. I did one with a lower voice and one with a higher voice, and I felt it had to be done that way. Even though you've got Layla Said and Shayla Said back and forth over and over again, and hopefully I do that enough, but when one character's sentence ends and the next character's sentence begins, I feel that you should be able to tell that it's two different characters speaking. Granted, that is my opinion, and I am not a renowned audiobook narrator, but I feel very, very strongly about that. And as I say, every single time I do one of these episodes where I talk about a project that I've got coming out that you are free to buy, you have to do a sample, a 5-minute sample of the book that everybody is able to listen to help them decide whether this is something that they would like to buy or not. And I know that I have a disadvantage in that my books are very short. You know, they're not full novels for the most part. But, you know, I think they still want you to pay an Audible credit for them, or who knows what Audible is charging. All I know is I get a very, very, very small bit of that, piece of that. But on the 5-minute sample that I chose, and I did it last after I had done everything else, I chose to do this scene where Layla has already suspected that this person is not really her sister, but an imposter. And so she goes through a process of testing this person. And that's the scene that I am going to share with you right here. It's just a sample of the book, but you can probably hear the two voices and hopefully tell the difference between them. And I'll meet you on the other side.
Shayla was in the empty room Mom had been about to convert into a home office when the divorce happened. She was talking on her cell phone, still wearing that white letter jacket without the letter.
"What are you doing down here?"
Layla asked, hoping not to sound too suspicious.
"One minute,"
Shay said to the person on the phone, and lowered it.
"Nothing." "Who's that on the phone?"
"It's a boy," Shay said, and to Layla's surprise, she couldn't tell if she was lying or not.
"A cute boy?"
Shay nodded, way too quickly. She didn't look nervous, she didn't look sneaky, but she didn't look herself. She was not the same sister from a week ago. Softly, Layla said,
"Let me talk to him."
She started to smile.
"I'll pretend I'm you. We'll see if he can tell the difference some other time,"
Shay said, not expressing any interest in the switching game. Not like she used to.
"Let me finish this conversation and I'll come up and get my homework done."
"Did you already do your Shakespeare thing?"
Layla asked.
"Did you know we have to stand up in class and read our scene?"
"That's the assignment." Layla would need a bit of encouragement from her twin. Before Shay could get back on the phone, she asked,
"Do you want to do them together? We could see if any of the words are the same in between a..."
Shay let out a theatrical sigh, as if dealing with someone unreasonable. She raised the phone to her ear again and said,
"Hey, I'll have to call you back. I need to get to work on a homework assignment."
Then, without saying goodbye, she pressed end and slipped the phone into her pocket.
"You didn't have to do that,"
Layla said, feeling upset, when she should have been thrilled that her twin would hang up on some guy so she could talk to her.
"It's no problem, really. I'll meet you upstairs in 1 minute."
Layla didn't understand why she wouldn't just go to their room right now, and glanced quickly around the storage room in case there was something in here of interest. But she didn't see anything out of the ordinary in here. Finally, she said,
"Okay, I'll grab us some Chips Ahoy."
"Sounds good,"
Shay said, and Layla left her alone. She went upstairs and to the kitchen, finding the bag of cookies in the bread cupboard, with what felt like only 4 or 5 left in the pack. The only other option in there was an unopened box of Triscuits, which Mom sometimes ate, but neither sister ever touched. Layla wondered if Shay would like them now, though. It was a chilling thought, because it meant she was thinking of the girl as somebody who was not really her sister. An imposter. She went into her bedroom and looked at Shayla's bed. Still neatly made, and her own, rumpled, studied on, somehow blander and unremarkable. Was she just imagining all this? Seeing changes where there weren't any? Doing that paranoia thing people did where they saw conspiracies and enemies and dangers that didn't really exist? It was only a couple of minutes later when Shayla came into the room, smiling in a way that no one about to do homework should exhibit.
"Ready for some Bard to English translation?"
Layla was more than halfway done with her assignment, but didn't say so.
"I think technically it's English to English."
"Right, as if forsooth is a word you've ever heard in your life."
It certainly sounded like something her sister might say, but then maybe the girl standing in front of her was trying to sound like her sister. She decided to test her troubling theory.
"That reminds me,"
Layla said, hoping to seem nonchalant.
"Shay, what was the name of that cat we had when we were in kindergarten? The one that got run over on Thanksgiving?"
Shay took 2 or 3 seconds to remember.
"Dr. Pepper. And it was when we were in second grade."
True, on both counts.
"Funny that you'd forget that,"
Shay said, in an undertone that almost conveyed disappointment, like Layla had gotten an easy question wrong on a recent test.
So there you go. That's my sample. And believe me, it's really, really hard to narrow a scene down to 5 minutes. Usually I will take a chunk of the story, whatever I have chosen is most representative of the book. And it's usually like a 7 or 8 minute segment because that's how long it takes to convey something. And then I'll just have to whittle here and there, little bits here and there. And on this one, yeah, I originally wanted to go a couple of more sentences, but it was at like 5:10, 5:15. And I was like, no, okay. I've spent enough time. It probably took me 40 minutes, 45 minutes to get that 5 minute sample. And that's too long. If you're a person like me, you might be shaking your head and saying that is unacceptable that you would waste that much time for the sample. And I don't disagree, except for to remind you that my motto is everything takes longer than you think it will.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Daddy, can I talk to you about something?
Sure, son. What is it?
How old are you, Daddy?
Well, that's not an easy question to answer, Tobias.
Why? Because you're so old you can't remember?
No. Because if this was a commercial, we'd want to keep it as general as possible.
Well, that makes sense. But you're getting up there, right?
I wouldn't say I'm getting up there, but...
But you're nearing the end, right?
No, son. I'll be around for a good long time.
You promise?
Well, I mean, I guess that's not something I can promise you, no.
Why not?
Well, because something might happen, something unexpected.
Like... You could get hit by a cement truck on your way to work and never regain consciousness in the hospital?
That could happen, sure, but...
Or you're racing to see me at my Little League game, and you're creamed between a Meadow Gold milk truck and one of those oversized load vehicles carrying a mobile home?
Oh, my God.
And again, you never regain consciousness because you're declared dead the second you get to the hospital?
Jeez, son, this is not the subject I thought we'd be talking about right now. And I always miss your Little League games, you know that.
I know, but it wouldn't have to be a car crash. A fatal, horrible car crash.
No, I hope not.
Like bowel cancer? Could that happen?
Ugh, bowel cancer? What made you think of that?
Audrey Hepburn died of bowel cancer.
Really? She did? I didn't... Wait, how do you even know who Audrey Hepburn is?
Was, Daddy.
Right. She died before you were even born.
Okay. Kirstie Alley, then. That was more recently.
Yeah, but she wasn't exactly Black Panther. Did you know Kirstie Alley, son?
Not personally, no.
Have you known someone who died of bowel cancer?
You're missing the point. You could die of anything. Soon. Could be tomorrow.
It's not gonna be tomorrow.
Could be today.
Son, this is really morbid. Why don't we talk about sports instead?
Vince Lombardi died of bowel cancer too.
What the hell?
He was a coach of football. American football, not the round kind.
I know who Vince Lombardi was.
Good for you, Dad. But I can't help but worry...
Son, bowel cancer isn't something that runs in my family.
I worry that you're gonna die. And Mom and me will be stuck with the cost of burying you.
Oh, Lord, is that what this is about? Did your mom say something about me dying of bowel cancer?
No.
Or the cement truck and the oversized load semi crashing into me?
I don't think so. I'm just worried that we don't have the peace of mind, knowing that your burial and funeral expenses will be taken care of once you're gone.
You're starting to sound like a commercial, son.
Don't insult me, Dad. You're not going to live forever.
Well, son, I plan on living a long, long time.
You could also have a plan to ensure that your family isn't burdened with sewing you up and sticking you in a box, then finding a place to hide that box.
Son, I don't know what you've been watching on TV, but...
I watch YouTube and TikTok. You know that. Television is for people like you. People are soon going to require burial expenses.
Holy shit, this is a commercial.
Yeah, Dad, for Dangardaroo Life, a comprehensive plan that can make sure your loved ones won't have to worry about the mortuary, cemetery, and coffin store expenses.
Jeez, are there really coffin stores?
Only 3 in the tri-state area. But don't worry, all of them are covered by Dangardaroo Life and its policy.
I'm not really comfortable talking about this, kiddo.
Oh, you'd rather wait until next January when Mom and me have to talk about it? About whether to have an open casket funeral or not in case the sight of you makes people sick?
This got dark really quick.
It was always dark, Dad. You should watch more TikTok videos.
All right, I'll try.
You should also try Dangardaroo Life. They have policies that start as little as $49.99 a month. And those will pay for everything, from the pine box to the big black car that carries you to your final destination.
Hearse. They call those hearses. Or at least they used to.
I didn't know, Dad. I'm just a kid.
Well, sometimes at least.
I can't say whether you'd rather have Amazing Grace played at your funeral or My Heart Will Go On.
The first one. Definitely the first one.
Or heck, maybe... Don't Want to Let You Go by Quiet Riot. Lots of people pick that one.
Lots of people pick a Quiet Riot song for their funeral?
See, I don't know that. But if you get a burial and interment policy through Dangardaroo Life, they will take care of those decisions. So we don't end up playing a fucking Tears for Fears song at your viewing.
Tears for... Your mom and I danced at our wedding to Tears for Fears.
Yeah, and she's always hated that song. She's never quite forgiven you.
What? I didn't pick it.
That's not important. What's important is that if you sign up, you can tell them what to play, and you won't surprise us by playing Break It Down Again at your funeral.
It was Everybody Wants to Rule the World at the wedding.
I don't care. I wasn't there.
So
what I'm asking you, Dad, is will you sign up with Dengardaru Life? Like, right now, so that you're covered if something terrible happens. Like, with an industrial crane, or a disgruntled coworker with an AR-15, or your bunghole.
You, son.
Answer the question, please, Dad.
Sure, son.
Not good enough. Say it.
I'll, get a policy to cover my expenses through Dengarzaprim Life.
No, that's something else. Dengardaru.
Dengardaru Life.
Thanks, Dad. You're the best.
Yeah. Thank you.
Put her there.
All right.
And wear your seatbelt.
Ask your funeral director about Dengardaru Life today. Coverage available at all Latham and Maraschino's discount casket and crematoriums in the tri-state area.
So one of the big tug-of-wars in the writing community is planning writers and what they prefer to be called intuitive writers. Now, they used to be called planners and pantsers. And at the most recent writers' conference I went to, and I think the one last year, somebody said, well, you know, that's a pejorative. We prefer not to be called pantsers anymore. But what it meant, what it was from, was writing from the seat of your pants. It was never intended to be, you know, anything sexual. It was never intended to be, you know, homophobic or any of the but I can see that people saying, I don't want to be called a pantser. It was just like in the 1980s when Star Trek fans didn't want to be called Trekkies anymore because there was a negative connotation to that. And then, you know, 20 years later or so, they started to embrace that. It's like, know what? I am a Trekkie. F you. So the writers who outline, who plan ahead what they're going to write, and then there are the ones who just write and they discover where the process takes them. And there are definitely advantages to both. And there are writers or writing teachers who insist on one or the other, you know, and it's my way or the highway. But now that I'm old, I don't care what the writing teacher says or what one particular person says, because I know that what might be right for you might not be right for me. You see, a man is born and he's a man of means. But along comes you. I feel like you've got nothing but your genes. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to say that it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. Not the Same was a mostly pantsed book. It was something that I had an idea for, and I started writing it because I really wanted to do this thing about twins. And I knew that the sister was going to go on a trip, and when she came back, she was going to have changed. Now, why was she changed? What was going on? That's the central mystery of the book. Did I know why she had changed? No. And that's a very big difference between the way that I usually write and the way that I wrote this. A lot of times I need to know where I'm working toward. I need to see the light at the end of the tunnel, because the tunnel can be long and it can be dark. And this was one where I didn't. So I am still wanting you to buy the book, obviously, but I think that this would have been a different story had I known where what it was building toward. When you are pantsing, a lot of the time you write and you write, you don't know where you're going. And then when you get there, you have to look back and say, okay, I need to put a signpost here. I need some character development here, etc. You know what I mean? They say that pantsing is faster, but then the rewrite is slower than the people who outline. And one of the things that I decided once I reached the end was that Layla, the main character, had a fear of public speaking. That was something that differentiated her and her sister. Shay had no problem getting up in front of crowds or introducing somebody on a stage, etc., etc. But Layla had a problem with that. And so I decided to go back and establish that and then mention it a couple of times so that at the end, when Layla has to overcome this fear, it didn't come out of nowhere. It's just something that we know about her. And that made for a more extensive rewrite. And I sort of crowbarred the references to her fear of public speaking, fear of being center of attention. I stuck them in, I think, 3 points, maybe 4 parts in the story. Another thing that I would have done differently if I had planned the whole thing out. And yeah, I'm not going to say what's going on with the twin sister, but I wish I had known from the very beginning, because you could lay clues, you could perhaps make it make more sense. It's just the way that I write and the way that you write are probably very different, and I need the structure that planning provides to keep me focused on the goal ahead and say, okay, well, I'm not sure what I'm writing right now, but I know what the next scene is, so maybe I'll write that scene. That is a tremendous advantage for me when I'm writing something that is longer than like 7 to 10 pages. And it's something that I wish that I could have told my younger self when I was just getting started. Is, okay, hey, stop. Outline through, at least give yourself the story points, the beats that the story is going to take, so that you can always look ahead and say, okay, I need to get there. How do I get there? That's something for me. It may not help you. Anyhow, I feel like I've been talking a long time, but I haven't looked at the clock. So maybe I haven't. I'm going to put this episode out there, and then I'm going to move on to the next project. And I suggest you do the same. I have been Rish Outfield, your evil twin, saying good night.
The Outcast was produced.
Big Sean, you okay?
Rish, lad, I can't go on. I just can't do the Creative Commons bit this episode.
Well, why is that?
I haven't the energy.
Hey, that's not what my mother said last night.
Nah, Rish. That joke is so tired. Tired like me.
Well, would it help if I did the Creative Commons license this episode?
Oh, it certainly would.
Okay, what do you normally say?
Something like, the Rish Outcast was produced under a Creative Commons
no derivatives, 3.0 license. All right. And how do I explain what that is? Just say that it means you can listen to and download the file, but you can't try to sell it or use it as your own. Okay. Anything else? Well, then, at that point, I usually insult you. And, to a lesser extent, the audience. Whoa, really? And they're okay with that? Oh, yes. They love it, in fact. Fake Sean, are you sure you want me to do this thing? Oh, please. It's just so tedious. And I've done it hundreds of times now. Well, technically, you've only done it a couple of times. I just run them over and over and over and over.
What?
And over and over and over and over.
Is that true?
Well, yeah. You know, I'll probably just edit down what you just told me and make it look like you said it.
You botched it.
Well, I'm sorry, folks. I'll never forgive you for this.
So there was a guy, there was a car right there, a truck rather, in the road that wouldn't let me go. And so I just had to hit the brakes and almost come to a complete stop. And he looked over and glared at me to the point where I was just like, oh, shoot, was I not signaling? Is that what? But I was signaling. And he was just not letting me in. And then I got here to the gas station. And just as I was approaching, a car pulled out right there in front of me. And she looked over at me and let me go. And I thought, wait a minute, that's 2 in 30 seconds. Maybe it's me.
Gus Creevy stood before the smooth glass of the light gas, of the light gas capture chamber, of the light gas chamber came... Gus Creevy stood before the smooth glass of the light gas capture chamber and watched as his assistants removed a fist-sized cork from the side. You will be pleased to know that I am willing to put in You will be pleased to know that I am willing You will be You will be will You will be pleased to know that I am willing to put in a good word for you with my brother and father. You will be pleased to know that I am willing to put in a good word. You will be pleased to know that I am willing to put in a good word for you with my brother and father.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? In the middle.
By the time they'd performed maneuvers to Silas's satisfaction, everything had to be wound again. This is chapter 13. Oh, nice. Ch-ch-ch-changes.
I suppose we were bad at a lot of things. But now that it's in the rear view, you know, I can learn a couple of things, a couple of lessons from the loss of the Doonstief. One of the lessons that we learned was to do it on a free website, to have your podcasts available through archive.org or some place that will always be there, and you don't have to pay to maintain it. And once the Doonstief went away, all of that stuff went away. I was shocked that Big says, okay, the Doonstief is officially no more. It'll be interesting to see how fast we get cut off of access to like our email address. And almost as soon as he had said it, it came to be. So if you have sent anything to editor@doonstief.com over the last couple of months, we didn't get it. We no longer have access to that address. And it makes me wonder because I would check it like twice a week, maybe 3 times a week. Big said he didn't check it at all, but I would check it and that's fine. Every once in a while, somebody would have a story that they wanted us to narrate. And instead of contacting me directly, they went through the Doonstief. And I wonder about that. I wonder if anybody has tried to contact us with an opportunity or, you know, just a fan letter or something, and we can't see it anymore. If you're one of those people, now you know why we didn't get back to you. Please get back to me in my personal email or contact me on Facebook or comment on one of my episodes or something. I see all of that. But I guess that'll be an outtake for the patrons. For everybody else, let me continue by saying...
They'll have Emma, too, when she's old enough. And that odd little hunty child of Gus Creevy's, if I'm any judge. They'll have Emma, too, when she's old enough. And that odd little hunty child of Gus Creevy's. And that odd little... And that odd little hunty child of Gus Creevy's, if I'm in... God... And that odd little hunty child of Gus Creevy's, if I'm any judge. The other children and... The other children and animals. The other children and animal... The other children and animals. The other children and animals were listening curiously, and Gerard agreed with Silvio. Percy was halfway through a rather more thorough than usual scrub when he made the mistake of thinking...